I'm Toby Davey from Vocalise, and you join me on a visit to Brook Street in central London. Brook Street is home to two great musicians, separated by 200 years and a wall. At 25 Brook Street, the great composer George Frederick Handel lived, while in the flat in number 23 Brook Street, the legend that is Jimi Hendrix lived for a couple of years. On my visit to Brook Street, I met up with Claire Davies, Head of Learning and Interpretation, and Sean Doherty, Head of Communications at Handel & Hendrix, to find out both about the projects and events they have run, linked with the RNIB for blind and partially sighted people, and the recent training by Vocalise in audio description and visual awareness. I began by asking Claire, what is so special about Handel and Hendrix, and what links them together?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I'd say that the most important link between them both is that they were incredible musicians from very different periods of time, but I think the music really joins them together. 250 years apart and a wall on Brook Street, and here we are able to open both of them up to the public to really see kind of contrast in musical history.
And a lot of people might think, well, you've got this great composer, you've got this blues rock legend. There's a great difference between them, but I believe, in fact, Hendrix had a couple of Handel LPs, didn't he?
He did indeed. Yes, it's a really wonderful thing to know, really, that, you know, Handel, being a great Baroque composer, was still sort of touching the kind of musical creativity of rock stars in the 1960s. Only did Jimi Hendrix have a copy of Handel's Messiah, which we know from the scratches on the LP that he played very often. He also had LPs with music by Bach, so he was really getting interested in lots of different genres of music and certainly understanding the foundation in classical music that has sort of evolved into more popular music.
We're now in Handel's bedroom, which is on the second floor of 25 Brook Street. The bedroom has two doors to it, so they're sort of symmetrical with the kind of classical proportions that were popular at the time that this house was built in 1723. The walls are a neutral grey colour and there are bare floorboards underfoot.
Some people may or may not know that Handel did start to lose his sight to the end of his life, and I think eventually went blind. And there's been a very close link with definitely Handel House and the RNIB, Royal National Institute of Blind People, running summer schools and other events for blind and partially sighted people. Could you tell me a little bit about the summer schools and the events that you've currently put on?
Considering Handel's legacy, the last 5 years of his life, you know, he gradually went completely blind and still continued to work right up until the end, which we feel is a very inspiring and sort of important lesson to take forward. So we've worked with the RNIB on some really lovely projects. So we have a Children's Day every Easter where we get visually impaired and blind children to come here and spend a day learning about composing, sort of in the styles of Handel and Hendrix, understanding the context of their lives and ultimately performing some wonderful music by the end of the day. We also do a composition summer school, which involves some of the most talented young composers I've ever met, coming along to learn from our composer in residence and working with musicians from our Handel House talent scheme to write new music, inspired by Handel's music, but really taking on new and modern forms, so making it very current, but really finding a foundation in Handel's work, whether that be using a libretto that he set to music or using themes that he was using and indeed composing techniques. And then that culminates after a week in a live performance of the new pieces to a new audience. So we're sort of profiling these wonderful composers, many of whom, you know, it takes them a while to actually realise that not all of them have sight. And I love that, you know, it's a lovely even playing field. The disability doesn't stop anybody achieving these wonderful things. We have sort of study days where we introduce Handel and Hendrix to adult audiences, and in particular the Hendrix flat is really great for that because it's a very tactile space, and so people really get that kind of immersive experience here. My favourite object in possibly the whole house, but certainly in this room, is Handel's bed. It is very much the focal point of the room. The bed itself is actually about two-thirds of the length of a normal bed. So it's very short, really, in the proportions that we know today. And the reason for that is that when Handel was living here, it was a very popular and common thing to sleep sitting up. I think we've been a bit cruel with the amount of cushions that we've put on it. There's a sort of cylindrical bolster cushion right at the back of the bed, and there are two square cushions in front of it. And then we have a red harateen spread. So it's a very sort of rough fabric, actually. It feels very man-made. It's like a very strong cotton. You know, it's not opulent like the velvets and the silks that you'd get in a palatial bed, but it's a very practical, warm fabric.
And what's sort of the feedback been like from blind and partially sighted people who've taken part in these events?
Well, I certainly think that thanks to the RNIB, they're well catered for. And so the feedback has been incredible. You know, it's allowed an accessibility to the building and to the history of the men that lived here on a level that I don't think they'd have got if they just came here during the day, which is exactly why we're trying to actually improve the day-to-day accessibility for visually impaired people. Because, you know, if we can do something like that, you know, as a special one-off, why can't we do that every day? And that's why we've chosen to work with Vocalise to continue.
Yes, because you've done some training with Vocalise in audio description and visual awareness. What sort of prompted you to do the training?
I think it was exactly that. It was the fact that, you know, we feel like we have this really strong allegiance with the RNIB and with visually impaired people. And it seemed to me that if we are just limiting that to something that you sign up for once or twice a year, then we're really missing out on, you know, a worldwide audience that could come here any day and experience the building in a sensory way that they absolutely should have access to. And so that's that. You know, we really, really want to improve our facilities for our visually impaired audience, you know, not least because I'm sure that's exactly what Handel would have wanted.
From the training, what did people learn? What did people gain from doing the training?
I think overall, for the staff, it was about awareness. I don't think that many of my colleagues had worked with visually impaired people before. And I think just understanding, you know, the difference in the kind of sensory world to a sighted person, I think while some of it seems sort of like a given and obvious, actually it's not. And I think that was really, really useful. And also to just understand that you don't have to be overly cautious and overly sort of almost fearful of insulting a visually impaired person. You know, there's lots of language that we use day to day, such as good to see you. And, you know, you can still say that because you're still seeing each other. You're just seeing each other using different senses. And I think that's been really, really important to my colleagues and myself.
As soon as you walk in here, you kind of get an explosion of colour. There's Persian rugs with these intricate patterns on. You've got a red carpet sort of clashing with this bright pink bed and, you know, every possible pattern and texture and thing you'd expect from a late 60s bedroom, especially Jimi Hendrix's. Lots of hangings and wall hangings and things draped over lamps. And if we take the bed in particular, you've got these amazing kind of bright pink and green pillows at the front of the bed, and then this kind of very psychedelic pink and orange bedspread, which is kind of, it's made famous by photographs of Hendrix in the 60s, which are all in black and white, so you can't really appreciate it. But now you see it in full technicolour, as it were, and it's a real feast for the eyes.
So I'm now joined by Sean, who's the communications manager here at Handel & Hendrix. And Sean went through the Vocalise audio description and visual awareness training, and we're in Hendrix's flat. Sean, firstly, could you tell me a little bit about the training that you did and how you've been able to implement that training into tours that you provide?
The whole team here at Handel & Hendrix went through the Vocalise training to just give us a kind of introduction into how to kind of make the attraction that we have here more accessible and just more exciting and generally more engaging for people with visual impairment. And, yeah, I mean, we're starting to kind of put together everything to do on an audio guide, kind of descriptive guide for people to be able to go around and, you know, absolutely get the best experience possible from Handel House and the Hendrix flat.
And was there any aspect of the training that you're now sort of putting into tours that you do for the general public? Has it sort of helped you in, I suppose, in a way, have another way of looking at Handel and Hendrix?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole team here have kind of taken everything on board that we got from the training and fed it into the tours here, and yeah, made it part of the experience. The thing that draws the eye and a lot of visitors comment on is the hat that's just over by the window. this black fedora that just sits on the table by the window, which isn't actually Jimi Hendrix's hat, but it's a replica of the hat he wore on stage. And all the photographs you see of Hendrix in the late 60s, he's wearing this hat. So it's kind of, as soon as you walk in, you get that feeling that he's just left, and he might have just left his hat behind, and he might come in and get it any moment. And yeah, it's just an amazing thing that draws your attention.
Now you've had the training, what's the offer? What are you going to take from the training and bring into the offer for blind and partially sighted people who come to handle an Hendrix?
We're really excited about bringing an audio descriptive guide to the house. We're in the middle of writing it at the moment. And the idea is that visitors can come and get a little MP3 player and some headphones from us at reception and be able to guide themselves using this guide around the building. And we'll also make it available online. So those that have a smartphone and indeed their own headphones will be able to download it in advance if they wanted to do that and indeed listen back to it afterwards.
Handel House and Hendrix Flat, you're obviously a smallish venue. Do you feel that other venues of a similar size should be providing an offer for blind and partially sighted people and obviously people with other disabilities as well?
Absolutely. I think accessibility is a really, really important thing to any heritage site. And I think accessibility, like you say, is actually about so many different things. It's not just about, you know, disabilities. It can also be to do with kind of race and class. And I think every organisation should be making the effort to be inclusive of everyone. And I think that, yeah, people should put a little bit more emphasis on it.
Thank you, Claire and Sean. And to find out more about Handel and Hendrix, visit their website, handelhendrix.org, or call 020-7495-1685. And to find out more about Vocalise and our work to make the arts more accessible for blind and partially sighted people, visit our website, vocalise.co.uk.